Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I got a song filled with shish for the strong-willed. When the world gives you a raw deal, set you off till you scream, piss off, screw you when it talks to you like you don't belong. It tells you you're in the wrong field when something's in your mitochondria, cause it latched on to you like knock, knock, let the devil in. Malevolent as I've ever been. Head is spinning, this medicine. Screaming, dick, 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 let us in. It, dick, dick, like a solid ball. Let your Allen pole bedridden. Should have been dead a long time ago.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers Off-Season Tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I were to bind with a symbiote who come pre with their own names from the alien rock they're on or whatever, I would, of course, have the symbiote named Gunk.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were to merge with a symbiote, I'm sure the one that would find me would be Bunk.
Oh.
Mostly because I think ours two would be friends. And then I actually have a grandfather whose nickname was Bunky, so that works.
So that would be the basis of your bond.
That's
because
cosmic,
it's seemingly random.
Right. Otherwise, it's totally random. But
right,
this Eddie Brock guy, he keeps getting nailed with venom, so maybe there is some cosmic significance.
Excellent. As you could tell from this introduction, Neil and I have read the room of the country and decided that two dudes are going to talk to you about venom this week. It's like it's the 1990s all over again.
Unsupervised.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways. Joanna has the week off for birthday festivities and dodging venom, which
I think I wanted to say that she is off pursuing a life of crime, but I feel like that puts too much on it. But I would say though that Joanna has probably spent too much time with my roommate Theo, who also takes like 3 weeks to celebrate his birthday. Like, it's just like, it's like a whole month worth of things.
Yep, just a bunch of fetting.
So, but which I say go for it. And then in our times, the earth is going to explode in like 10 years or whatever. Just do it.
Great news. Good good news. But of course, we also learned that from the movie Venom. So on topic. I like it.
Yeah.
We're of course talking this week about the movie Venom. It made a ton of money at the box office this weekend. We're guessing because it's not a good movie that if you wanted to see it, you have seen it. But we're still going to break this podcast up into a first section where we talk about Venom the character, then a second section with a little calm introduction, and then we'll let you jump off as we discuss the insanity that is Venom. And then for this week's bonus segment, if you are a patron at patreon.com/stormofspoilers, at the Maesters and above level, you will get a bonus segment where we will check in on the DC universe. There's a lot of DC news and projects. The DC shows are coming back to TV, including a new Batwoman. We're going to quickly break some of that down for you. Also, in the housekeeping news, we are a Game of Thrones podcast. We will be at Con of Thrones. It will be July 12th through 14th in Nashville. And unlike last week, tickets are now on sale for Con of Thrones, Nashville, July 12th through 14th.
ConofThrones.net, I think.
Yes, or just Google Con of Thrones.
And that also works.
Hopefully that works.
At Con of Thrones on the Twitter.
Perfect. And we'll see you there, and we will have seen the final season of Game of Thrones by then, so we'll have lots to talk about, and it'll be super fun. We'll wear some onesies and stuff. Joanna's not here, but Neil, I hear we have some reviews.
Yeah, we got two reviews that I would like to share from the last few days. First one is from Gato Gordo. Okay, that works. It's 2 stars. Love the podcast and the hosts. Not enough for 5 stars, though. Sorry. We'll go back to the review now. Love the podcast and the host, except for the inordinate amount of time spent blandly naming the people who give them money each week. I hope this practice ends because I find it insanely disruptive to the flow of the ideas generated. And so, Dave, you actually told me something before we started recording that I did not know. That is a thing that people should know if this bothers them, which, you know, I get it.
Well, there's going to be an ad break where we read names regardless, a potential ad break. So if you don't get one served to you, it's not like we suddenly stop the show to read names. There's a break there anyway. Sometimes there's also names. And second, as a friendly podcast host, I'll give you a pro tip. I put backing music under parts you could skip if you want to. There will never be background music over the content part of the podcast. If you skip somewhere or if you suddenly hear music fade up, use that little skip button on your device until you don't hear music. Go back a few seconds and you'll pick up right where we left off. It'll be super easy, but that's a little tip for listening to Storm of Spoilers or any podcast that I work on.
That is some life enriching advice is what that is. So yeah, feel free to skip that part. But we also appreciate all the people's names that we read out because, like this review said, they totally do give us money. So, mad respect. Next review from Char D427. I originally came to this podcast for the Game of Thrones content, but have absolutely fallen in love with it. Aww. I love all the discussions on movies, series, and pop culture in general. Hopefully one day the host will give my favorite series a viewing as well. Black Sails, a brilliant show. 5 stars, keep up the great work. Charlie, not the first person to tell us about the Black Sails show.
Not at all.
There's a large contingent of people out there. I don't know if I got it or if I am getting it, but like there's a complete series box set that's coming out, and I requested one from the publicists that are handling it. So when that gets here, I actually do intend to watch Black Sails. That does not mean we're going to do an episode. It just means that like I will watch it. So
I mean,
I will,
first of all, if
I will eventually
like it,
have an opinion.
Yeah, if you like it, then I'm more inclined to watch it.
All I remember
is
that
it's
the Michael Bay pirate show.
Right. Well, I also like pirates, so maybe we could just do a pirate show even if I don't watch it.
We can ignore the whole Johnny Depp thing. I like it.
Well, I think it's important to talk about, you know, that because pirates are like these like kind of despicable people that become romanticized slowly over history.
But in reality, they were extremely rapey.
Yeah, most of them were, horrible men, thieves, criminals, the kind of people that Mexico would send to us because they'd send their worst. No, Dave, resist. Pull back. Thank you so much for leaving us reviews, everybody. Yeah, hey. excellent for reviews. And while I'm going down a pirate hole, Neil, you know what time it is.
Yeah, definitely stay out of that pirate hole, because we got to go storm chasing.
Pew, 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 he says in his deep voice. That's not Joe.
All right, so we're going to talk about one movie, show, book, story, podcast, whatever, each, that we were obsessed with. Dave, mine this week is that I finally finished the story, the main story on the Spider-Man game for PlayStation.
Yes.
Couple of thoughts. One, I was emotional. It was great. Two, I now can't wait. I now, understand what a DLC is, which I did not before a few days ago. And I can't wait for October 23rd when the Black Cat DLC story comes out. So it was great. I'm still working on the side missions, but not as hard as the main mission. And it was nice. Cool. I haven't actually finished a video game in a long time.
I've been playing this on Saturdays with two other friends, and we went on like a backpack collecting tear last session, so we are no further through the story, but man, do we have some backpacks.
Right, and you can get the homemade suit after you get the backpacks.
Yeah, we're like 10 away from the homemade suit, and I'm looking forward to it. As I mean, I love alternative Spider-Man, first of all, as like a person. And then I also, in video games, have discovered I really like outfits. So Spider-Man's mm-hmm. like 1,000% up my alley. It's only going to my friend's house who has a PS4 once a week has kept me from purchasing this game. And I might, you know what, it might finish and I might just buy it anyway.
Because well, that's the thing now. It's been great. And this is the thing about DLCs, which is basically like, they're like expansion packs for your game. And so they create more story, which I'm like, I'm all in. Like, in the back of my mind, the perfect version of this video game, like, you get like a Black Panther DLC and you get like a Thor DLC where you play as these characters who come to New York to have some sort of adventures. And then they interact with Spider-Man and it's like playing with your, you know, your action figures. It's great.
Yeah.
But it's digital and it looks way better than your action figures.
I just might buy it because I was like, man, we only have 10 backpacks left. I wonder if we get to the rest tonight. And my friend turned to me and he's like, are you going to do 100% completion on this group playthrough? And I was like, man, I don't want to be an asshole, but I kind of want to.
That's damn called platinuming, I'm told.
Oh, good. Yes.
That's a term that they use when you 100% across the board. So now I have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. No,
what a disgrace I would be if I didn't. Platinum.
Legend, Zelda Breath of the Wild, which involved finding all those like 367 poops. Ugh, but it was so nice. If a game's good to just run around in, I will do everything in it. I'm playing like some LA Noire on the side now, which is like an old game, but I never played it. And it is like too close to like GTA 3 levels of difficulty doing normal things that I'm like not into it. Spider-Man, on the other hand, tap a few buttons, and even if it's the wrong buttons, you do something amazing. It's
you do something
great.
Cool. Yeah. I am looking forward to taking a little time away from it because the Friday the 13th game is one of the free games on if you're a PlayStation Plus member, which I guess I am. I'm not. You know, when you first start up your PlayStation and they're just like, give us your credit card number and sign up for this. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yes, that happens to everybody, Neil.
I'm totally that person. but I'm excited to finally check that out. I think I actually had a version of it because I was a Kickstarter backer, but I don't remember where that is. And it might be for an Xbox that no longer works, but the Friday the 13th game, very interesting. I'll report back.
Yeah.
That is my storm in not so many words. What you got going on this week?
So I'm working on a writing project that I can't really talk about, but it's set in 2004. So this week I went back into 2004, which is early college for me and probably you. I mean, I guess we're close to the same age.
Yeah, I graduated high school in 2002.
So yeah, to try to find some jokes for this story based on that would actually like root things in 2004. And man, is it fun to try to come up with and or remember jokes from 2004. You have like Speaker Box, The Love Below is out. It's an election year. Weapons of mass destruction jokes are all over the fucking place. John Kerry, we were making fun of him. Swift Boat veterans. I've been trying to a Swift Boat veteran joke this week and have failed thus far outside of just making it a John Kerry joke somehow. But I would like to especially direct people to, you know, take a second in 2004 and remember that, like, I don't know how it was for you guys, but for me, it felt sort of like the world was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we were in this war that I was pretty sure we shouldn't be in. And I was of the age that, like, some of my friends from high school had joined up and now it was like a real thing because it was post 9/11.
I think actually in 2004 I was dating a lovely lady who was a medic in the army and she did like a whole tour in Iraq. That was a rough like year.
Yeah. So we were basically post 9/11 pre iPhone. Is like this weird time in America where we're like super xenophobic and afraid of things that aren't our own government for a while. And then, like, fucking technology comes in and fucks everything up, and we elect a black president, and, like, things are crazy, and now, you know, obviously the world's more on fire. But spend a little bit of time listening to Mr. Brightside. Maybe, you know, get Usher's Yeah spinning. Remember what it was in 2004 for a week, because that's what I did and was surprised, you know, obviously, because it's a time period I lived through and was young, I have some nostalgia to it. But the pop culture wasn't as bad as the actual culture was at the time. So that looking back on 2004 makes me happy that one day I will look back on this, but wary, because I thought things were bad then and things got worse, and I think things are bad now. So, you know, deep breath. Maybe we'll, you know, just global warming ourselves to symbiote planet and everybody will be fine. Gunk and Bunk will trapeze around the planet.
Right, and beat people up.
Yeah.
I guess eat them. That's a thing. I found a list of words that sort of became a thing in 2004. I would like to read two of them.
Yeah.
One, reincarnation, which is defined as coming back to life as a hillbilly, which, yeah, you know, Bush administration was weird. And Carmageddon. Which, it's like when everybody is sending off all these really bad vibes, right? And then, like, the Earth explodes and it's, like, a serious bummer. That pretty much describes how everybody felt in 2004. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. Little did we know. We just had to wait 14 years and then we'd
just
really see
get worse.
Go. Yeah. All right. Always striving towards progress, we are crawling towards Benham after this break. And we're back to talk about Yay. Venom. We're going to talk about Venom before the Venom movie, which, you know, some comic book backstory for you all.
Yeah.
The black Spider-Man costume, which becomes Venom. Basically, if you've seen Spider-Man 3, which most people have because it was so insanely profitable, even though not necessarily the best Spider-Man movie from Sam Raimi, you know that the Venom is this alien black goo that latches on a Spider-Man and makes his costume black and makes him feel all icky. And then he gets it off by realizing it's damaged by sound and ringing it against a church bell. And it drops down onto this guy named Eddie Brock, who has a grudge against... He's a journalist with a grudge against Spider-Man. And the suit sort of remembers being on Spider-Man enough that it gives Brock some increased strength and the ability to create webs and this cool white spider on his chest and everything like that. That is basically true in the comics. There's some more ins and outs that have to do with the fact it exists in comic lore. Like, he gets the black suit on an alien planet where the Beyonder has gotten all the Marvel villains and heroes and placed them on this planet with a whole bunch of, like, alien vehicles and labs because they needed to make playsets for action figures. And they didn't, like, have those in the Marvel Universe. So, you know, in this weird alien lab, Spider-Man finds a new costume. Why? Because characters switch costumes so you could make them into cooler action figures. Not have to, you know, paint all those, like, black webs on Spider-Man that could scrape off. You could just have him have a black costume. The costume itself was an idea generated by the fans, by a fan in specifically, and then it was bought by Marvel for, like, $225. He didn't know that the costume was an alien, that particular fan, but he did have some ideas of it being slightly more advanced with some Reed Richard technology and designed by the Wasp, who at the time was designing a lot of hero costumes. At some point, like, I'm gonna say like 6 months after this big crossover event where Spider-Man gets his black suit, he goes to Reed Richards and he realizes that it's alive and that it's actually feeding on him, which is something that does carry over to the Venom movie, but does not carry over to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, where Venom just sort of like makes him an asshole. It's actually like eating his biomass. It's making him tired. It's making him like sleepwalk. It's trying to bond with him. It's a symbiote. So Reed Richards
has to achieve symbiosis.
Which
I don't think is a thing.
I think symbiosis is a thing, right? Yeah, or is it just I've been alive
or
for almost as long as Venom?
Oh,
like, I think
no,
it's
a
scientific
a
term. Yeah, yeah. So, because I, you know, Marvels might be
crazy. I saw someone making fun of that word the other day, and I was like, interesting. Does it not mean what they think it means? But no, it does. It totally means the same thing.
Symbiote's a dumb word. I'll give that person that. Like, symbiosis is a state. I don't know if we need an individual word for the two things that are in that state, but here we go.
I've always thought of symbiote as like a proper name. Like, it's the symbiote because it does symbiosis.
Yeah. But why? I guess if it's a proper name, yeah, it makes more sense than like a term.
Anyway. Like, that's their species. There's a symbiote named Todd somewhere.
Yeah, but they're actually called the Clintar. We don't have to get into that.
Is that true?
I mean, I was going to get there eventually. Let me get... Okay, back to the comics origins. Reed Richards takes the suit off Spider-Man. Spider-Man actually makes his own fabric black suit because he needs to look cool, and those comics were selling okay. The suit eventually comes back to Spider-Man, captures him, and that's when he goes to the bell tower to get it off. In the comic book, he rings it and rings the bells in the church bell tower. The suit comes off, but Peter Parker also passes out because he's been reduced by the symbiote again. And the symbiote, like, kind of ushers, he carries an unconscious Peter Parker to safety and then disappears into the shadows. That's retconned later when Todd McFarlane takes over Spider-Man, drawing duties. And for Spider-Man 300, they introduce Venom. And it turns out the symbiote didn't drag him away and then slink off into the silence. He dropped right out of the bell tower onto Eddie Brock, who's a journalist who falsely reported the ID of a criminal that Spider-Man then caught and revealed that Eddie was a bad journalist. And so now he can't even get a job writing celebrity trash, or as he calls it, Venom. So Venom's named after fake news, just in case you didn't know.
Man, we should bring that back.
I mean, it's pretty good. I thought they were going to bring it back in this movie, but they don't actually make the full connection. They just show him, like, getting turned down for listicle jobs.
Venomous. That'd be a great, like, thing to call somebody.
Yeah.
Insults, so I guess.
The venomous Fox News.
Yeah.
Exclamation point.
Because it immediately sounds evil.
Yeah. So that's... Brock is pissed at Spider-Man for that. Later on, as Venom develops as a character, because Venom was a very popular character, he's like super menacing and of the time of the late 80s, early 90s in comic books, where you have these muscular anti-heroes who, you know, sometimes kill to get their message across. Venom's of that ilk. There aren't a lot of those type of characters in Spider-Man, or at least there weren't at the time. So Venom hit, and he hit big. He's this big, gooey, alien, black, toothy thing with a long tongue. Because of that, he... you know, Marvel started taking him through the process of being a popular character, which means he shows up lots of places. There isn't a lot of continuity that sticks. It kind of, you go back and you re-smooth over some things you've said about the symbiotes and how they work in the past. Sometimes Venom is like actively leeching away at its hosts. Other times they seem to be completely fine with it. It's more like a, you know, but you need to feed it a little bit. The movie kind of takes both from this, but there's a weird period of time where Venom's slowly becoming an anti-hero because he's popular. Meanwhile, the guys who created Venom are like, this isn't what we made the character to be, which is how Venom's son, Carnage, comes about. And he is a symbiote on a mass murderer, so he's allowed to be just fucking crazy. And that leads to events like Maximum Carnage or whatnot, but it also leads to Venom becoming more of an anti-hero as time goes on. Blah, 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 blah. Lots of stuff happens. The Venom symbiote switches hosts a couple of times. It ends up on Flash Thompson, the Spider-Man guy that, like, his high school bully. Except Flash Thompson went to Iraq and had his legs blown off. So he's in a wheelchair, except when he's wearing the Venom symbiote, in which case he becomes Agent Venom, which is actually a good guy. And then Agent Venom loses the Venom symbiote back to Eddie Brock. But then Brock... it has at that point been anti-Venom, and so Agent Venom becomes Agent Anti-Venom, and then Brock loses the symbiote again for a period of time as Flash Thompson takes it and takes over Riot, who is his grand... Toxin, who is his grandson symbiote. Point is, things get really fucked up about who has the Venom symbiote and whether or not it could bond to multiple people and if it's actually helping its host or hurting its host, to the point where it's not Venom that's the anti-hero anymore. It's the actual symbiote. Are these things good? Are these things bad? Are they alien invaders? Are they just bonding with... Did he just bond with somebody who was writing quote-unquote Venom too early? And so like this particular symbiote like has an evil bent and a good bent inside of it. All of this sort of culminates in the current Venom storyline, which involves Null, the symbiote god, and we learn the origins of the symbiotes, which is basically he like killed a celestial and then made this like living sword, and the sword bifurcated into pieces of his consciousness, and these symbiotes were supposed to, the Clintar is what they call themselves, the alien race, are supposed to like dominate planets for this god Null, but at some point all the Clintar decided they actually wanted to be good, and there's this whole back and forth where basically the new retconned origin is Venom, the individual symbiote, wanted to fully bond with a single host, which was weird to a species that was built to dominate. So he got sort of cast out of society because he was a loser. And they put him on Battleworld, where Spider-Man found him in that alien lab. So that's like the whole Venom circle of how he starts off as like a cool costume and then is like a villain and then slowly becomes like this character that's trying to do good, but then is also really bad, and how they managed to have kept this going for, 30 years, almost 40 years, I think. That's Venom.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, luckily the on-screen versions simplify it. So Spider-Man cartoon, Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3, just like a evil alien black suit.
Right.
And then it doesn't have to worry about if it's like eating the host or has an ulterior motive. I'm surprised actually that Venom the movie deals so much with the space race of things and what their ultimate goal is, because that hasn't been part of what Venom's story was since like Planet of the Symbiotes, which was like 97 or 96. So it's not a often looked at part of Venom, mm-hmm. because usually Venom, like Avi Arad would probably tell you, is like this anti-hero who's just there to look cool, which is why they thought he'd be able to work without Spider-Man as far back as Amazing Spider-Man when this project was first put into development before it was saved by Tom Hardy.
And it seems like going back and reaching into that storyline sets you up for world building around Venom better.
Right.
So like by dealing with it a little bit in this movie, they can sort of expand on it in the next movie. And I thought, we'll get into it obviously in the next segment when we talk about the actual Venom movie, but I thought it was really, it actually, I figured it out. I was like, oh, I get it. I get that there are different symbiotes and each have different personalities, and it made actual sense to me, which is, sort of surprising.
Yeah. And it's good because it took the comics a long time to get to that position. When they first talked about doing like a Venom movie, what I described on like, I think a thought bubble or something with Joanna that I wanted them to do was this one arc that's basically John Carpenter's The Thing, but with Venom, where it's like Venom shows up in Alaska and is slowly becoming people, because one of Venom's powers is to camouflage himself as anything. In the movie, it just looks like the tendrils decide when they want to be visible or not, but that's actually, he should be. It's a power of the suit to be camouflaged. In theory, parts of him are covered with the suit all the time. But the idea that, it could be anybody and he's picking off these people, it was much more of a horror-centered Venom. But then we get this movie that's a PG-13 tonal mystery. did you, watch any Venom media that wasn't Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3?
No. I did not. I do. I mean, I remember the cartoon. It was just the Spider-Man cartoon. There wasn't a separate Venom cartoon, was there?
Right. It was just the Spider-Man and then Spider-Man Unlimited.
Yeah. So I remember that original old cartoon. Venom just, he was weird. And it really, he always has been a character to me that sounds exactly like what you were describing, which is like he's just there to look cool. And I was like, all right, well, that's just like evil Spider-Man. So that was sort of my exposure until Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, which I didn't like for a million reasons. And I don't remember having any strong feelings about Venom either way. Like, it was just an unmemorable thing where I was like, before it, I was like, ooh, cool, Venom. And then when you finally got to the movie, it was like, oh, that's whatever. It was Topher Grace, I guess.
Yeah.
So
there was a version of Venom in the early 2000s for the Ultimate Spider-Man line that I actually liked. And I think that was the first, not that I didn't like the original Venom, but the idea of a alien presence and like these weird rules about what it wanted on Earth and with people always sort of rubbed me the wrong way. Like, it works in Maximum Carnage and whatnot because you're talking about sort of like a familial sibling thing. Carnage is technically Venom's son. But in the Ultimate Spider-Man line, the Venom suit was created by Peter Parker's father and Eddie Brock Sr. as a way to kill cancer, but it goes horribly wrong. So it also works under the rules that it's devouring its host, but it's because it was supposed to initially be a suit that covered you and then ate all your cancer cells and then went back inside. But instead what it does is it bonds with the host, and then that host has to consume entire people in order to keep Venom working. I always thought that was like a cool streamlined version.
Which I think is probably the darker version of the movie that we're going to talk about that came out this past weekend.
Yeah, they do sort of, make up some rules about how this symbiote stays alive and whether or not it's hurting Eddie. But I guess unless you have, I don't know, Venom's been in a lot of video games too, but I'm trying to think about something notable he's done in those video games besides just be Venom.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually pretty happy about it. I don't have any feelings about the character going into the new movie, which I think probably works to the movie's advantage.
Yes, I think if they would have, I think that's one of the few things Sam Raimi also recognized with Venom, is if you do Eddie Brock as like a roided out, blonde, angry, muscle-bound rage person, then that character hits a wall really fast without the benefit of a comic book story around him. So I do see the choice in both Topher Grace and Tom Hardy as a net positive choice, even if I don't think the movies around them worked necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're right on the edge of doing this, so we should probably just transition into Venom. After this break.
All right, so we're going to take a moment, as we do every week, to thank some of our small council from our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. I'm going to do this with quickness this week. We'll see. I don't know. But anyway, here are the people I would like to thank this week. We have Debbie DeNice, Del Nakamura, Dennis Ramirez, Derek Dock, Derek Bachman, Delane Mitchell, we got Dre, we got Dumb Pockets, we got Eleanor Porkish, Elisa Love, Ellen Rabin, Ellen Chen, Elise Abschips, Emily Ralph, Aaron Gaworek, Aaron Singular, Fanny Martin, Felix Jazz, Fiona Grimm, G, just G, I like it, Gate Crew Girl, and Georgia O'Brien. Thank you to all of you.
And I want to thank Great on Toast, Greg Jagger, Gretchen Lindensmith. How did I screw up Lindensmith? Gretchen Lindensmith. I'm sorry,
found
Gretchen.
Found a way.
Yep. Gustavo Villarreal, Hannah Watkins, Heather Walsh, Holly Hunt, Hope Shock, Huangli, Ira Storm, Iski I, Jabberly, no last name, Jackie Quinn, James Cooper, James Heath, Jen Calhoun, Jennifer Quinn, Jessica Lair, Jim Scott, Jocelyn, no last name, Joe Jenka, Jose Cordova, and Josh Froscheiser. Josh Froscheiser. That's how I'm gonna go with it.
Just
committing.
Listen.
Enjoy the grooving backing track that's happening right now. And thank you so much for donating. You make this show possible. And we're back to talk about the main course, Venom, which I've been describing to people as a movie that I both think nobody should see, but also everyone should see. So I've called it Schrodinger's Venom on Twitter because it is weird.
It is transformative.
This is our calm intro. In case you haven't seen Venom, Venom tells the story of journalist Eddie Brock, who is Tom Hardy, who does some really crappy things to his girlfriend, not like assault things, but breach of privacy things in a journalistic investigation that causes her to rightfully break up with him and causes him to be blackballed at his job. Months later, he comes in contact while researching a story and sort of helping a homeless friend with a symbiote named Venom who wants to use him as a host and needs to eat sometimes, likes tater tots, and basically decides to take over the direction of Eddie's life. Eddie sort of tries to fight it, but Venom's super powerful, and Venom wants to stop his brothers from destroying Earth because Venom sort of likes Eddie at that point when we get the plot. Final showdown occurs. Venom. This is like the most... I think we were talking about Venom expectations on the bonus episode, which I know not everybody heard. I heard that parts of Venom were like a early 2000s superhero movie, like a pre-Marvel cinematic universe where it was still hit or miss on how to plot these movies. And I was not disappointed with that description. This movie is plotted in all sorts of weird ways. It's shot super generically so that the first hour really drags. And then Tom Hardy manages to like elevate what he's given into another movie, which has a different tone than the first movie. And then slowly, because of the plot machinations, everybody is forced to join Tom Hardy in this ridiculous movie by the end, is sort of how it played for me. Do you have a similar experience?
Yes. And I think there's a lot worth discussing about like how this movie feels and what it compares to. And like for me, it took me back to like the late 90s and the early 2000s. One of my writers who writes for Film School Rejects, Kira, tweeted at me that it feels like it belongs in the same decade as like Lawnmower Man or The Saint with Val Kilmer.
Ooh, yeah,
and I was
the
like,
Saint.
Damn. There's a lot of it that feels in the Spawn and Blade era of just sort of the, you know, on the street level sort of griminess. And then there were parts of it that reminded me of like this would sort of fit with Sam Raimi's first Spider-Man movie, which when you go back and watch that first Spider-Man movie, there's a lot of really great stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that's just like 90s leftovers in that movie, which I know it didn't come out till 2002, but it was supposed to come out in September of 2001, right? Didn't they push it back?
They did push it back. It wasn't supposed to come out that close, but it did have a little bit of a delay to get rid of the Twin Towers.
Yeah, so... So I feel like this movie sort of fits in with that. And it's funny because when I tweeted about it being a great like 90s throwback, someone did point out that throughout the entire movie, Tom Hardy is using a smartphone, which did not exist in the 90s, which I will contend is true and is also the only way I know that this movie was made this year. Like,
yeah.
Otherwise, you could have told me that it was made, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And, other than questioning some age things from Tom Hardy, I'd believe you.
Yeah, even the design of this movie is of that era. So, like, they're shooting San Francisco, but instead of doing attempting to do something new with the location, shooting the location of San Francisco. It's literally a drone shot, not from the Bayside, of the city to like a rock track. And I'm like, what movie is this? Is this like a teen comedy where it's like, then I moved to San Francisco. Things got worse for old Eddie Brock. But like, that's really how it plays. And it plays it that unironically for a long time. Really until the symbiote gets on Eddie, I was unsure if the movie knew what it was doing. It might not. It might not know what it's doing at the beginning. Or if it just like got studio noted to death, because there isn't that much in the first hour of the movie that feels like it's a movie that makes sense. But then also I go back and I'm trying to think about like, they also didn't feel like they were wasting time with plot. They just were wasting time on things that were being played earnestly that like didn't need to be. You've got like a really nice setup for this like Asian shop woman that's being harassed by like a gangster. You've got a pretty good setup for Jenny Slate's character, or at least they try to seem to make her sympathetic. And you have like an okay setup of like this homeless lady that Tom Hardy gives $20 to, even though he's apparently been broke for 6 months. And like those things all feel like they're leading to something, but then the movie really quickly decides it's done with all that and either shelves it for later or abruptly ends those plot lines and become something watchable, which is kind of amazing. But it's just at that point, I think, run out of runway to actually be a good movie.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the one piece of advice you gave me before I saw it today was, once you get to the lobster tank scene, it'll be fine. Like, that's when it gets started. And that's really true. And honestly, it feels like they had like a 30-minute movie in their minds to start with, and then they just had to create filler for the rest of it. And some of the filler is fine. Some of the filler is boring. I think Tom Hardy is doing this sort of weird, like, grizzled, douchey good guy routine at the beginning. Like, he's like an activist, but he's also kind of a dick. His character doesn't get interesting until the symbiote starts talking to him. His character is actually not that interesting. But once Tom Hardy gets into the shtick of like the two voices going on inside Eddie Brock's head, great.
Yeah.
Is this where we should pivot to spoilers? I feel like the lobster scene is where we should turn.
Yeah, the lobster scene, when the movie gets good, we go into spoilers. So if you want to go see Venom and haven't yet, know that don't worry about arriving on time. First of all, the movie's going to start 30 minutes after the showtime anyway, because fucking commercials. Second of all, not good first hour of the movie, so don't worry about it. But if you want to pop in for the funny part of Venom, join us in the storm section. And storm section. So like, Tom Hardy's really hungry. And then that leads into a bike chase that goes on for five times longer than it needs to. And
right.
Then
it's,
the movie
it's
really
the unnecessarily long secondary action sequence.
Yeah, where they're like, not these people have drones that explode in blue flame now.
Right.
I'm like, what? Why?
Like, it's like you can tell how much money they got to make this movie by how many of the like core action sequences they have. So like, when Deadpool went from having two to having three in the sequel, that's a big deal. This one only has two, and one of them is
three. It has three.
Wait, it,
so
has three?
It has motorcycle.
Yeah.
It has SWAT team.
Oh.
And then it has the final one.
Those all kind of
SWAT team reeks of being recut pretty significantly.
Right. Cause it's all in, it's all sort of in the dust. But in my mind, everything that happens after the symbiote first links up with Eddie, which is, can we generously say halfway through the movie, maybe two thirds of the way through the movie, everything that happens after that is, in my mind, one big action sequence. Like, it's just one man on the run set piece.
It's what happens when you're deprived of momentum and then suddenly given extreme momentum. And like, the nice thing is that once it finds that period, you actually stop caring about like the fact that the plot stops making sense.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh God, there's a symbiote on me. And like Riz Ahmed's like, I want that symbiote back. And you're like, yeah, great. Okay. I guess that's fine. And then after the movie gets fun and pivots to Riz Ahmed has a symbiote and Venom suddenly likes Eddie Brock because they're both losers. So why not save the Earth? And then we just go with it. It doesn't, the movie doesn't stop. To explain
actually,
that or explore that.
That's one of my things that I wrote down. I forgot to say in my overall thoughts that this movie is the Eminem song of superhero movies. Like when that Eminem song comes on at the end, you get it. You understand why they would do that. And I am both confused with / perplexed by / in awe of the symbiote's character arc here, because it's kind of funny that they like chose to sort of, that's part of like, I feel like that's part of what Tom Hardy is talking about when he's like, I was drawn to the character. He was drawn to like these two personalities sort of battling against each other. And what I think the movie spends a lot of time on, which is interesting, is like the symbiote deciding that he's going to be nice, or like he's going to be a hero. Like that's a thing that is, that feels like a presence in the movie. And I think that's great.
Yeah. It's really, and I'm not exactly sure how it gets there. Like it must, but that's the thing. The momentum of the movie doesn't stop to be like, here's a thing that came from space and was tortured like its compatriots in a lab, manages to escape on this one guy, and then spending 48 hours on that guy is like, you know what? Maybe Earth is fine.
Maybe we don't need to invade Earth.
Yeah, and then also glossed over in that is doctor friend of Michelle Williams is like, Eddie, it's eating your heart. And Venom's like, no, we can fix it. And apparently just does, because that never comes up again.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a darker version of this movie where Eddie Brock like is dead at the end. He's just like a hollowed out, like he's like what are those nuts that you take out of the shell? He's like just a peanut shell.
Like a peanut shell.
No peanuts in it. Just such a weird, like the whole symbiote deciding to be okay thing is just very strange to me. But also again, does feel like the sort of thing that was in probably in the original, like potentially R-rated version, and gets darker and also serves as good fodder for future installments. I have some other thoughts.
Yeah.
I recently, as you know, on this, the other thought that I wanted to say is it's kind of funny because we talked about last week, that movie, The History of Future Folk, which is about an alien who shows up to enslave humanity, hears music inside of a Home Depot and decides, I don't want to enslave humanity anymore.
Yeah. That was actually pretty close.
Yeah. It's basically what the symbiote does.
Tater tots. He
loves tater tots and chocolate. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm also fairly new to the concept of fridging. I did not understand it before. I think I understand it now. Although, I'm worried that, like, there's a version of it in this movie where it's sort of like anti-fridging, I guess, where it's about Eddie Brock's character making a choice that he knows is very bad, and for it ruining the life of the woman he loves. Like, she loses her job, things get, I'm sure, shitty. She has to get a new boyfriend. That's always a task.
Yeah.
She has to go meet Dan from Veep, who is playing Dan from Veep, just more polite. So it feels to me like a version of that where she's sort of being fridged with like his guilt, which I found like, I was like, oh man, really? But she does sort of get like a fun moment. I feel like she's the only morally centered person in this entire movie, because she like helps out during the final fight to help you know, defeat Riot, I believe his name was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and like Eddie Brock, he kind of saves the day, but also he's participating willingly in a bunch of murders and decapitations. So not great there. So I don't know if I should have a problem with that.
I didn't have a problem with
Michelle Williams. I just noticed it. I think that's that might be where I landed on it. I was like, oh, I noticed that Michelle Williams is great, but they like put her in that weird wig, which didn't look terrible to me, but apparently it's not great. And then they sort of didn't do anything with Michelle Williams. She was just sort of there until the end.
Right. But, well, I mean, the ending shows the most promise. So a Venom 2 that is a romantic comedy of Venom and Eddie trying to win back Michelle Williams while Carnage is out there.
Yeah.
And like Woody Harrelson is doing his version of whatever Tom Hardy's doing in this movie. That's actually a movie that I'll watch. So like the mid-credits scene to this movie that introduces Carnage, I was like, that's I understand Venom, why the movie is what it is, if all it needed to do was introduce me to this character, Tom Hardy's Venom, who is a action comedy character who's basically both halves of Lethal Weapon in one body, and like that's what they do with him. I want to see him get into a romance with that. They already had him kiss the symbiote. Yes, it was on Michelle Williams, but they, you know, bring into question whose idea that was. So you already have like a love triangle within your two main romance leads. And then Woody Harrelson basically trying to channel Natural Born Killers, but in like a slightly comedic way. Here's why Venom's so frustrating. Bad movie, watchable parts, but really works as a sales pitch for what otherwise I would say was like a really bad idea. If you would have pitched Venom versus Carnage to me as a romantic comedy, I would have been like, absolutely not.
But it's like, with this cast, sure.
Yeah, now that I've seen it, you're like, yeah.
And I guess I question, you know, because we know this is a movie that sort of probably did get chopped up a lot in post and in studio notes and things like that. So the question is, were these things that we noticed that feel like they're potentially good for the longer term, the larger, more expanded version, was that part of the original plan, or was that something the studio sort of put in there later? Which I think is a more interesting question.
If I had to guess, I would say that the stuff that Tom Hardy alluded to liking and being cut, the 30 to 40 minutes of content, was that romantic comedy, right? Because wouldn't Tom Hardy love playing that? And then at the way this movie
Tom
ends,
Hardy loves everything that involves Eddie Brock and Venom communicating. Like, it's clear that like he as an actor switches on during those scenes.
Yeah, exactly. So I would like to think, if I had to guess from no back knowledge, that they took some of that out, and that's where the line that is basically a voiceover line that's like Venom suggesting they get her back at the end sort of came in. So you add that one little line, you move the romance that, you know, was clogging up your already absurd goddamn plot, where it takes a symbiote in a old woman's body 6 months to find an airport in a country where she is a, you know, otherwise blending in with people.
One thing they probably cut, I'm assuming they would have cut in that scenario, that I would love to hear more of, is Michelle Williams' Venom voice, because that's also a thing that we get to see. I was not expecting to see, although I guess in the first scene when the symbiote's like jumping between Jameson, which was what, J. Jonah Jameson's son, right? The astronaut, jumps from Jameson to the lady.
Oh, you're talking about Riot?
The EMT. Yeah, Riot. Yeah. So as we follow the journey of Riot, it's just jumping around. So I guess I should have expected it, but to get basically every main character in this movie who doesn't die a horrible death with a symbiote at some point.
Yeah. Or Dan. Dan survives and doesn't get a symbiote.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
But he's the only one.
Listen, Dan, you can have one next time.
Yeah.
You're such a nice guy.
It kind of irks me as a comic book fan, not that they changed the origins or that they changed the character or anything like that, but that they have a couple of symbiotes in this movie, and they each have distinctive colors. Venom's black, Riot's kind of like a gunmetal gray, there's a blue one, and there's a yellow one. I thought the blue one was green in trailers, because there is a green symbiote made by the Life Foundation in the comics called Phage, and I thought the yellow one was Scream, because the yellow symbiote in the comics is Scream. I, you know, watch this movie, both those symbiotes die off before, like, becoming anything. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. They were Easter eggs. They were for me. Nope, they're blue symbiote and yellow symbiote. I watched the credits. Riot and Venom are the only symbiotes with names. Why not do that? Is that bugs me.
I did not notice that. I also noticed that Woody Harrelson was not in the credits, so they never named that character.
Cletus Kasady.
Cletus Kasady?
Yeah, he's going to be Carnage.
Okay. I mean, but they also established that there's like a comet out there that has a bunch of these on it, so...
Oh yeah, we haven't established, so it could be that Carnage just gets like another one of these aliens from somewhere, or it could be like the comic books where Venom like spawns a child.
And
that child bonds to Carnage.
I took it to mean that there was another symbiote that got off, that accidentally got out of the ship. Although that doesn't necessarily align with the beginning where they're like, we only lost one sample. The other, how else?
Yeah, no,
is
I definitely think,
there? Or if he's a second wave immigrant to our planet.
No, I think you definitely want him to be the son of Venom, because that just, like, you're already doing a romantic comedy with the two Venom hosts. Why not make it a familial one, you know?
And there's a lot of good. Carnage is Venom's lover from their home planet, and Carnage is there to chase Venom down. And it's basically Call Me By Your Name meets Venom.
Ooh. Yeah, no, I like that too. But the idea. The idea being is that there's a relationship between the two symbiotes, but not between the two men. That's, I think, kind of key. So you see, yeah. There's like a symbiote family.
Although, you know, I feel like the movie made enough a point of making it significant that we should believe them that it is significant. This notion that there are more symbiotes out there. They all sort of have their own unique personality. Whereas I think... So Sam Raimi, it was just like the black goo gun in his suit, right?
And yeah,
same,
like fell
same
out of
sort
the...
of thing, but it wasn't like symbiote one of five. Like it was right. Just this goop that infected the suit, and then it sort of took on, if I remember correctly, it sort of took on like the worst parts of your personality, sort of thing.
Yeah, it made him emo Peter Parker.
Right, it made him emo Peter Parker. So that, to me, is a completely different origin than what this movie is telling us is true. Because this movie is telling us that it is like an alien society that, you know...
is waiting for global warming to take over our planet.
Exactly. And that each one of these, they're not all just like a little bit of the goop. They're each one individually their own thing. So
yeah, with personalities and names before they bond to anybody.
Opens you up to all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah. I mean, that's closer to a symbiote than a parasite, so at least we're scientifically moving in the correct direction. But yeah, there is a lot of world building here. A surprising amount for a spin-off movie, but I guess not that surprising considering that Sony is rapidly expanding. It's Spider-Man properties. The second post-credit scene to this movie is a clip from Into the Spider-Verse, and it looks amazing.
Yeah. Oh, can we talk one more Venom thing before we should absolutely talk about Into the Spider-Verse footage?
Yes. Yes, we can.
But I wanted to get your take on what I'm calling the grunge polygons. I did not really like the way Venom looked in this movie, especially compared to Spider-Man 3. I actually think Venom looks pretty cool in Spider-Man 3. This was just weird. Like, it there wasn't very much white. Like there was, it didn't look like a suit. So it looked like more like a monster, which I think is what they were going for, but it gets a little CG blobby, especially when he's fighting with Riot, who's not that different of a color. It's like black and then dark gray.
Right.
So I did not like the look of it. And it's funny because going back and looking at photos from the Topher Grace version, I was like, it looks better. So am I crazy to think that this looks slightly worse?
I don't think you're crazy. The Spider-Man 3 tendrils are keyframe animated, so much so that they had, I think, an artist constantly throughout post-production whose job it was to add and tweak tendrils up until the picture locked.
Yeah.
So that has like some amazing.
That's really cool. Cause I remember the scene where Peter Parker rips Venom off.
Yeah.
That was actually really cool. And I don't feel like any of the transformation scenes in this new one are particularly memorable. Because it's just like, it's almost the literal manifestation of like CG goop being poured onto an actor. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, well, this one doesn't have, I mean, I doubt it was keyframe animated. It has a lot of, since Spider-Man 3, there is a whole cottage industry of how to make that effect automated. And it is for a lot of Venom. So yeah, you can see a lot of it in the trailer, where the symbiote starts to look like a, you know, CG water ball. Like it almost starts to look as bad as, the Abyss water head, which was groundbreaking at its time, but in Abyss, which was right. In the 80s. So the fact that it looks like that now makes me say that somebody was like, hit the randomize button, and then whatever came out became the thing, whereas in Sam Raimi's team was individually placing all these tendrils. And so I think because of that, because it's dealing with like, models and computer processes in order to create those models and to light those models. Venom can look good as a blob if you really focus on it. And Venom could look good as a fully on suit if you manage to, get out of the transformation phase and into the fully textured phase. So it's really hard to see because the movie doesn't really know how to light him, but there are a few moments, I think, in the end where it works. He looks like shit in the smoke because it's literally futzing all the detail that would make him look okay. So that Venom CGI is crap, but he does have sort of like the sheen to him. Like he's almost wet looking when he's fully transformed.
Yeah.
And when it gets fully into that mode and with all the veins, I think, the stuff in the bodega at the end, looks really good. But if you start with blob and you have really good end model and you tell the computer to make up the stuff in between, or anytime a face comes out of either Tom Hardy or Riz Ahmed and then turns to look at them, all the stuff coming out of the back of the face is just the computer being like, you want a blob? Here's what we think a blob looks like. And so it looks like nothing because it's not animated to have specific motion. So you're absolutely right that this is worse 90% of the time.
Hmm.
And it's simply because they didn't put the time into it. I don't know that whether they sense. Didn't have the time or
maybe they didn't have the money.
Yeah, they didn't have the money. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of this where, we're obviously focused on the fist for this second because Tom Hardy's looking at this like comically black fist where like the border between the CG and actual Tom Hardy is like really crappy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why you wouldn't take a few moments and figure out a way to make that look better, but they didn't.
They totally didn't.
Hopefully
he'll look better in what I assume will be the second one based on how much money it's already made. So,
yes. I mean, I would really love to see Carnage also, like, I think if you add the viscosity of blood to what you have with the symbiote, that might make it a little cooler. So hopefully, they've learned some design things in First Venom. We keep talking like there's going to be a Venom 2 because it made so much money this weekend that barring a Justice League size drop off next week, or a Batman v Superman size drop off the week after that, we will most likely be getting a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, its budget, listed budget, was $100 million, which is relatively low. Maybe they did cut some corners on the CG, but they made $217 million worldwide in the first weekend. So that's usually a good sign.
Yep, usually a good sign that this weird Tom Hardy movie that I'm not recommending anybody should see is going to maybe have a sequel. But then maybe see it, because it's, I don't know, it's these are the sorts of performances in superhero movies I feel that will only happen by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, what if The Dark Knight was bad around Heath Ledger is like sort of what this feels like. I don't think it's like that iconic a performance, but there really is like somebody made a choice and followed that through, and that person was Tom Hardy, and they tried to make a movie around him that I'm sure Sony had a whole bunch of notes about what it needed to be, but the center holds as much as it can in this movie. And
well, it was like it's like Tom Hardy in his own mind said, I'm going to try some stuff. But then he never told anybody else.
Mm-hmm. And then they just showed up and he's like, I'm going in that lobster tank. And they're like, oh, all right. All right. And he single-handedly steers the crappy movie to some watchable moments.
Yeah. Good job.
And then there's an Eminem song.
And then, more frustratingly, there's a really good Run the Jewels song after the Eminem song. So I don't know why the Run the Jewels song wasn't the song for Venom. But you know what? It's funny when I say it's the Eminem song of, superhero movies, because it really, like, there's an element to it where it's like, sometimes you get an Eminem song and it's pretty good. And it kind of, you know, bumps a little bit. So, you know, it's good. Like, I've found myself enjoying Eminem songs, but if you tried to make 10 Eminem songs, the likelihood that I'm going to like more than maybe 3 of them is very low. So mm-hmm. if this crew made 10 Venom movies, I would probably only like 1 or 2. but I like this one, I guess. I like the last 30 minutes of it for sure.
Yeah. So this is definitely, this movie is going to be some sort of like mainstay on some shit movie film festival, because it really, like, it's, even though I'm saying the first half is bad, it's not like unwatchably bad. It's just like, why were they making this movie bad?
This feels like the movie that like kids who are in like as young as like 10 or 12 now are going to be telling their friend, they're going to be talking about in their 30s as the movie they watched on Cinemax back in like 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
This feels like that's where it's going to be, that Cinemax superhero movie for a new generation.
For sure. It's like, what if Green Lantern was good for the last 30 minutes is sort of how this movie feels. just like as an analogy. All right. That was two dudes talking about Venom.
Yeah, we did it.
What are we going to do next week, Neil?
So next week we are going to have a Halloween movie great debate. Is that's okay. That's what we're doing next week.
Yeah. So what?
I remember planning that.
We're each going to bring a movie we feel is like your Halloween time, your autumnness, your movie, your Halloween movie. And then we're having right now our Patreon donors of the Secret Movie Club voting on a Halloween movie that we'll be watching with them. Those are going to be, these cannot be our picks. Beetlejuice, Evil Dead, Hocus Pocus, and a fourth one I don't remember. Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, I'm a little sad that I can't pick either Cabin in the Woods or Hocus Pocus, but I'm going to come up with a good one.
Yeah, well, you gotta stretch your boundaries. You guys, listeners, can pick Cabin in the Woods or Hocus Pocus if you want. That's not going to be a restriction on you. We want you.
And then we're going to talk about that movie on the podcast. Either way.
Yes. So what you need to do is email us, tweet at us. If you're on the Patreon, you could get us at the mailbag channel in the Slack. Let us know your favorite Halloween movie. give us a brief argument as to why. I expect at least some nostalgia. So, you know, don't feel like guilty. This is favorite, not best. If it's a bad Halloween movie, maybe that's all the better for you. Sometimes I know that certainly is for me.
Like Hocus Pocus.
I don't, that is not a, just a, that's not a bad movie. How dare you?
Okay.
Anyway, well, maybe we'll find out. But yes, please contribute to our great debate. The best Halloween movie. I'm not gonna put a lot of constraints on it. So that include that in your argument.
So it's basically just like movie to watch around Halloween.
Yeah, I'm not going to fault somebody if they say Lilo and Stitch. I'm going to ask why, and I might not read their thing on the, you know, podcast, but I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum if you have a good argument for it.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's the great debate.
Yeah. Ooh, the great debate song will be back. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Excellent. So until next week, when we'll be great debating, Neil, where can people find more of your stuff online?
You can get me on filmschoolrejects.com. You can get me on Twitter at rejects. You can also follow at one perfect shot on Twitter. I do a lot of tweets for that, most of them. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers, or email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Send us your Halloween mailbag. No, Halloween great debate picks, and we'll choose one or two.
Excellent. Yes. And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on another podcast called Fighting in the War Room at fightinginthewarroom.com. This week we talk about fellow film critic David Ehrlich's Hedgehog he is babysitting. And you know what?
Fascinating.
That's what we need. We also talk about A Star is Born, but it's like a feel-good episode.
All right.
Hedgehogs and A Star is Born. Well, because A Star is Born is apparently good, not because of what happens in A Star is Born, which is sad. Anyway, I'm getting into something else. You listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us during Venom. Enjoy some tater tots. Don't fall down.
This is what she used on my brother and her sister. Hacked them to pieces. We found parts of the bodies all over the house, in places you wouldn't think. Funny thing is, the heads have never been found. Hands and feet, things like that. No heads, no heads, no heads, no heads, no heads.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.